A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been looking at the ADHD medication landscape and wants to know four things. First, why Vyvanse is king among long-acting stimulants. It's been the top seller for over a decade, pulled in $4.5 billion in 2024 alone. Second, what actually separates the methylphenidate family from the amphetamine family chemically, and why that split matters for patients. Third, what older and newer amphetamine competitors exist, and whether any of them are real threats. And fourth, whether anything in the pipeline can knock Vyvanse off its throne. To answer all of that, we have to start with the family tree, because the split between methylphenidate and amphetamine isn't just chemistry trivia. It determines which drug works for you.
And it's a split most patients discover the hard way, by failing one side before they find the other. Let me lay out the two families. On one branch, you've got methylphenidate, Ritalin, Concerta, Focalin, and a whole shelf of generics. On the other, amphetamine, Adderall, Vyvanse, Dexedrine, and several newer formulations. Both are central nervous system stimulants. Both increase dopamine and norepinephrine, but they do it through completely different mechanisms, and that difference is the root of everything.
Different how?
Methylphenidate is a reuptake inhibitor. It blocks DAT and NET, the dopamine transporter and the norepinephrine transporter, so the dopamine and norepinephrine your brain is already releasing just hangs around longer in the synapse. Think of it as putting a stopper in the drain. Amphetamines do that too, but they also reverse the transporter. They push neurotransmitters out of the presynaptic neuron, including from vesicular stores, the little packets where dopamine is held in reserve. So you're not just keeping what's already there, you're forcing more out.
So methylphenidate works with what you've got, and amphetamine empties the cupboards.
And that's why amphetamines are generally more potent, why they tend to last longer in equivalent doses, and why the subjective experience is different. Patients on amphetamines often describe more of a drive, more motivational push. But that comes at a cost. Depleting vesicular stores is also why the amphetamine crash can be so much worse for some people. You've emptied the cupboards, and now there's nothing left until the brain restocks.
Which takes how long?
Hours to days, depending on dose, duration of use, individual metabolism. That come down is one of the main reasons patients switch families. Someone on Adderall who feels irritable and exhausted every evening at 6 p.m. might switch to Concerta and find the landing is much gentler, because methylphenidate never emptied the reserves in the first place. But the trade-off is that methylphenidate's duration is typically shorter. Concerta's Oro's delivery system gets you around 10 to 12 hours, but most methylphenidate formulations top out there. Vyvanse consistently hits 10 to 14.
Let's talk about Vyvanse specifically, because that's the one sitting on the throne. What makes it different from Adderall XR, which is also a long-acting amphetamine?
The prodrug mechanism. Vyvanse is lisdexamfetamine, D-amphetamine chemically bonded to the amino acid lysine. In that form, it's inactive. It doesn't do anything until enzymes in your red blood cells cleave off the lysine, releasing the active D-amphetamine gradually. That's the entire trick. It means you can't snort it for a rush. The enzymes don't work in nasal mucosa. It means absorption isn't affected by stomach pH, so you don't get the food interactions you get with Adderall XR, where orange juice or anything acidic can tank absorption. And it means the plasma levels rise and fall more smoothly, less of a spike, less of a trough.
So the prodrug design solves abuse liability, food interactions, and the peak and crash problem all at once.
In one molecule. It's elegant pharmacology. Shire, now part of Takeda, knew exactly what they had. Vyvanse has been the top-selling ADHD medication for over a decade, $4.5 billion in 2024. That's not just brand loyalty, that's a drug that delivers what it promises for a lot of people.
But not everyone.
No, and this is where the family split gets personal. Some patients find Vyvanse too smooth. The onset is so gradual that they don't get the subjective kick they need to initiate tasks. With Adderall IR, you feel it in 30 minutes. there's a clear signal that says the medication is active now. Vyvanse doesn't give you that signal. For some people, that's a feature. For others, it's the reason they switch.
And some people get emotional blunting.
The flat affect. Patients describe feeling robotic, zombie-like, disconnected. It's not universal, but when it happens, it's distressing enough that people will try the other family just to see if they feel more like themselves. And sometimes they do. Concerta or Focalin can provide focus without that emotional dampening for the subset of patients who experience it on amphetamines.
So we've got two families, different mechanisms, and roughly what percentage of patients respond to one but not the other?
The number that comes up consistently is around 30%. About a third of patients who fail one stimulant family will respond to the other. The problem is we still can't predict which third. There are genetic factors. Dopamine transporter density, COMT enzyme activity, metabolic differences in the CYP2D6 pathway. But there's no reliable test you can run in a clinic that says start with methylphenidate or start with amphetamine. It's still trial and error.
Which is a rough process when you're the one doing the trialing.
It's awful. You take a medication for a month, you feel nothing, or you feel terrible, and then you taper off and try the next one. Meanwhile, you're still dealing with whatever ADHD symptoms brought you to treatment in the first place. The Attitude Medication Comparison Chart, which lists over 30 stimulant formulations across both families, is a testament to how many options exist, but also to how individualized the response is. If one drug worked for everyone, we wouldn't need 30.
The chart rates Vyvanse highest for smooth coverage, but not for motivation boost. What wins there?
Immediate release amphetamine salts, Adderall IR. That's the one patients consistently rate highest for that initial motivational push. It's also the one with the highest abuse liability and the worst crash. The trade-offs are baked in.
Let's look at the amphetamine competitors then. What else is on that side of the family trying to take a piece of Vyvanse's market?
The most direct competitor on duration is Mydeus. It's a triple bead amphetamine formulation, three different bead types in one capsule, each releasing at a different rate. It's designed to last 16 hours, which makes it the longest acting amphetamine on the market. Vyvanse tops out around 14, and for a lot of patients it's more like 10 to 12. Mydeus was developed specifically to cover the patient who burns through Vyvanse by mid-afternoon.
16 hours sounds like an advantage. Why isn't Mydeus the king?
Two reasons. First, it's only approved for adults and adolescents 13 and up. Vyvanse is approved down to age 6. That's a huge chunk of the market Mydeus can't touch. Second, the side effect profile is steeper, especially for insomnia. If your medication is still releasing amphetamine at 10 p.m. because you took it at 7 a.m., you're not sleeping. For many patients, 16 hours of coverage means 16 hours of side effects.
What about the liquid and dissolvable formulations?
Dianaval XR is a liquid amphetamine suspension, extended release, so you get the duration without having to swallow a pill. Adzenys XR, ODT, is an orally disintegrating tablet, same idea. These aren't competing with Vyvanse on efficacy or duration. They're competing on access. Patients who can't swallow pills, kids, elderly patients, people with GI issues. It's a different slice of the market. Useful, but not a throne toppler.
And on the methylphenidate side, anything new worth noting?
Astaris is the most interesting recent approval. It's a combination of Certix methylphenidate, a prodrug, same concept as Vyvanse, but for methylphenidate, and immediate-release D-methylphenidate. The prodrug gives you the extended coverage, the IR component gives you that initial kick. They looked at what Vyvanse gets right and what it gets wrong and tried to split the difference.
Does it work?
Early data looks solid. Duration around 13 hours, onset faster than Vyvanse. It's too new to have the kind of market data that would let's compare head-to-head with the incumbents, but the concept is sound. A prodrug methylphenidate solves the same abuse liability problem Vyvanse solved, and adding an IR component addresses the motivational onset complaint. Whether it scales to Vyvanse level revenue is another question entirely.
So that's the stimulant landscape. What about the stuff that isn't a stimulant at all? Daniel mentioned the pipeline. Is there anything coming that could actually dislodge Vyvanse?
This is where it gets interesting, because the real threat to Vyvanse may not be a better amphetamine. It may be the growing preference for non-stimulants among prescribers. The DEA scrutiny on Schedule II drugs has been intense for years. Every refill requires a new prescription. No refills allowed, no phone-ins in most states. Patients have to see their doctor every month. The opioid crisis hangover has made every controlled substance prescription a liability. And into that environment walks Qelbree.
Viloxazine.
Approved in 2021 for ADHD in children and adolescents, then expanded to adults. It's a non-stimulant, not scheduled, no abuse potential. It's a selective norepinephrine reuptake inhibitor. Works more like atomoxetine than like Vyvanse, but with a different side effect profile. And it's become the fastest growing ADHD medication by new prescriptions in 2025 and 2026. That's not nothing.
Fastest growing by new prescriptions. Does that mean it's actually taking market share, or is it just growing off a tiny base?
Both. It's growing off a small base. Vyvanse still dwarfs it in absolute revenue, but the trajectory matters. Prescribers who are tired of the Schedule II headache are reaching for Qelbree as a first-line option, especially for patients with comorbid anxiety or tic disorders where stimulants can make things worse. If that trend continues, Vyvanse's market dominance starts to erode not because someone built a better stimulant, but because the definition of first-line treatment shifted under it.
What about the triple reuptake inhibitor I've been hearing about?
Centanafadine. This one is novel. It inhibits reuptake of dopamine, norepinephrine, and serotonin. All three. If it gets approved, it'd be the first new mechanism for ADHD since atomoxetine in 2002. That's more than 20 years without a new approach. Phase 3 trials are underway. The idea is that by hitting serotonin as well, you might get better emotional regulation and fewer of the stimulant side effects. But we don't have the data yet. The readout expected in 2027 could be a blockbuster or a disappointment.
Atomoxetine was supposed to be a blockbuster too.
And it wasn't. It works. Atomoxetine helps a lot of people, but it never threatened the stimulants on efficacy. The effect size is smaller, the onset takes weeks instead of hours, and the side effects, nausea, fatigue, sexual dysfunction, aren't trivial. Centanafadine could repeat that pattern. Or it could be the thing that finally gives non-stimulants a real efficacy argument. We won't know until the data lands.
There's also the digital therapeutics angle. Endeavor RX, neuromodulation devices. Are those real?
Real, but niche. Endeavor RX is FDA authorized as a prescription video game for pediatric ADHD. It targets attentional control through a specific gameplay mechanic. The data shows modest improvements in attention measures. It's not replacing medication. What it might do is serve as an adjunct, something you use alongside a lower dose of stimulant, reducing the side effect burden. Neuromodulation, transcranial direct current stimulation, trigeminal nerve stimulation. Same story. Interesting signals, small effect sizes, nowhere near pharmacotherapy. None of these threaten Vyvanse's market share in any meaningful time frame.
So the throne is secure in the stimulant category, but the category itself might shrink.
That's the dynamic. Vyvanse is the best amphetamine prodrug on the market by a comfortable margin. Mydays competes on duration but loses on side effects and pediatric approval. Azstarys is promising but unproven at scale. The generics, Adderall XR generics, dexmethylphenidate generics, compete on price but not on the smoothness of the experience. Vyvanse's patent expired in 2023, and generics are entering the market, which will eat into revenue. But the brand loyalty is real, and the prodrug mechanism is hard to replicate with the same consistency.
I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier, the enantiomer ratio. Adderall is a mix of D-amphetamine and L-amphetamine. Vyvanse is pure D-amphetamine once it's cleaved. How much does that matter?
It matters a lot, and it's one of those details that most patients never hear about. D-amphetamine is the isomer that gives you the cognitive focus and the motivational drive. L-amphetamine is more peripheral, more cardiovascular stimulation, more physical jitteriness, less central effect. Adderall is a 3-to-1 ratio of D to L. That L-isomer contributes to the side effect profile, the elevated heart rate, the blood pressure increase, the physical anxiety some people feel. Vyvanse, by being a prodrug of pure D-amphetamine, avoids the L-isomer entirely. That's part of why it feels cleaner to a lot of patients.
Let's talk about the crash profiles more concretely. You said amphetamines deplete vesicular stores, and methylphenidate doesn't. What does that actually feel like at 4 p.m.?
For someone on Adderall XR, the crash can feel like a wall. Irritability, exhaustion, brain fog, sometimes worse than the unmedicated baseline. It's not just the medication wearing off, it's the dopamine reserves being temporarily depleted. Some patients describe it as borrowing focus from tomorrow. Methylphenidate's calm-down tends to be more of a gradual return to baseline. You notice the medication isn't working anymore, but you don't feel worse than you did before you took it. For patients who are sensitive to that crash, the methylphenidate side of the family is often the answer.
And Vyvanse lands somewhere in the middle?
Vyvanse's crash is generally milder than Adderall XR's because the plasma levels decline more gradually. The prodrug activation is rate limited by those red blood cell enzymes. You can't cleave the lysine off any faster than your body is built to do it. So the drop in D-amphetamine concentration is smoother. But it's still an amphetamine, and it still depletes vesicular stores to some degree. Some patients still crash on Vyvanse, just later in the day and less severely.
What about the food interaction thing? You mentioned Adderall XR and orange juice.
Adderall XR absorption is highly pH-dependent. Acidic environments, citrus, vitamin C, anything that lowers stomach pH can reduce absorption by 30 to 40%. Basic environments, antacids, baking soda, can increase it. Patients learn this the hard way when they take their Adderall with a glass of orange juice and wonder why it doesn't work that day. Vyvanse doesn't have this problem because the prodrug is absorbed intact. The lysine conjugation protects it from pH effects in the gut. The activation happens in the bloodstream, not the stomach. That's a genuine quality of life advantage.
So if you're someone who eats breakfast, which most people should, Vyvanse is just more reliable day to day.
And consistency is everything with ADHD treatment. You're building routines, you're trying to establish habits. If your medication works differently depending on what you ate for breakfast, that undermines the whole project.
Let's circle back to the genetics question. You mentioned dopamine transporter density and COMT. What's the current state of pharmacogenomics for ADHD? Can you get a test that tells you which family to try first?
You can get tests. Several companies offer pharmacogenomic panels that look at variants in DAT1, CAMT, ADR2A, and a few other genes. The problem is the predictive power isn't there yet. COMT is the most studied. It's the enzyme that breaks down dopamine in the prefrontal cortex, and there's a well-known polymorphism that affects its activity. The VAL variant metabolizes dopamine faster, the MET variant is slower. Theoretically, MET carriers should need less stimulant and might respond better to methylphenidate. In practice, the effect sizes in the studies are small and inconsistent. No major guideline recommends genetic testing before prescribing. It's still trial and error.
Which is frustrating, because the cost of error is a month of your life.
And sometimes more than that, if the failed trial makes someone give up on treatment entirely. I've seen patients who tried one stimulant, had a bad experience, and concluded that medication wasn't for them, not realizing they were standing on the wrong branch of the family tree the whole time. That 30% crossover response rate means there are a lot of people walking around unmedicated who would respond to the other family if they tried it.
What about the non-stimulant pipeline beyond centanafadine? Anything else in phase 2 or 3rd worth watching?
A few things. Solriamfetol is interesting. It's a dopamine and norepinephrine reuptake inhibitor already approved for narcolepsy and excessive daytime sleepiness. It's being studied for ADHD. Mesindol CR is a partial orexin 2 receptor agonist that's been around since the 70s as an appetite suppressant and is now being reformulated as a controlled-release ADHD treatment. And there's always someone tinkering with nicotinic receptor agonists. The idea being that nicotine improves attention, so can we get that effect without the addiction? Nothing in that group looks like a Vyvanse killer, but they expand the options for patients who can't tolerate stimulants at all.
The orexin thing is interesting. That's the wakefulness pathway, right?
Right. Orexin regulates arousal, wakefulness, appetite. The thinking with Mesindol is that by partially activating orexin receptors, you improve alertness and attention without the direct dopamine hit that causes abuse liability. It's clever, but the clinical data for ADHD specifically is still early.
So we've got a landscape where Vyvanse is secure at the top of the stimulant category, but the category itself is being squeezed from below by non-stimulants like Qelbree and potentially centanafadine. The real disruption isn't a better amphetamine. It's a drug that makes the Schedule II conversation irrelevant.
That's the thesis. And it's worth noting that Vyvanse's patent expiry in 2023 means generics are coming, which is good for patients and bad for Takeda's revenue. But the prodrug mechanism itself is hard to genericize perfectly. The lysine cleavage rate depends on the manufacturing process, the purity of the isomer, the formulation. Some generics will be indistinguishable, some won't. We've seen this with Concerta generics. The Oro's delivery system was so specific that some generics were rated as therapeutically inequivalent by the FDA. Vyvanse generics might face the same scrutiny.
Which means brand loyalty might persist even with cheaper options available.
If patients try a generic and it doesn't feel the same, they'll go back to brand. Insurance companies will fight it, but prior authorizations exist for exactly this reason.
One thing we haven't touched on, the motivation kick versus smoothness trade-off. You said Adderall IR wins on motivation. Is that purely about the speed of onset, or is there something else going on?
Speed of onset is part of it, but it's also about the peak concentration. A faster, higher peak in D-amphetamine concentration correlates with a stronger subjective sense of activation and motivation. Vyvanse's gradual rise means you never get that peak, you get a plateau instead. For someone whose primary ADHD struggle is task initiation, that missing peak can be the difference between a productive day and staring at a to-do list for 6 hours. Some prescribers handle this by combining a low-dose IR booster with Vyvanse in the morning, get the kick, then ride the plateau. But that adds complexity and a second prescription.
And it reintroduces the abuse liability.
It does. The IR booster is just straight dextroamphetamine or mixed amphetamine salts, snortable, divertible, all the things Vyvanse was designed to prevent. It's a workaround, not a solution.
What about Asteris on this specific point? You said it pairs a methylphenidate prodrug with an IR component.
That's the pitch. The IR-D methylphenidate gives you onset within 30 to 45 minutes, and the Serdex methylphenidate prodrug carries you through the afternoon. Same concept as Vyvanse Plus Booster, but in a single capsule with a single prescription. If it delivers consistently, it could peel off the patients who like Vyvanse's duration but need more of a morning signal. Too early to say whether it's winning that battle in the real world.
You mentioned earlier that Vyvanse almost didn't make it through clinical trials. What's the story there?
That one, I think, belongs to Hilbert.
The enantiomer ratio was wrong in the original patent.
Say more.
Shire filed the original patent on a racemic mixture, both D and L isomers, of the lisdexamfetamine prodrug. The thinking was, Adderall's a mix, the market's comfortable with a mix, let's do a prodrug of the mix. But when they ran the phase 2 trials, the L isomer was causing tachycardia and hypertension without contributing to efficacy. The PI on the trial. This was a CRO in New Jersey. I was coordinating, he told the Shire team. You need to drop the L-isomer, or this drug's going to have a safety profile no better than what's already on the market. They went back, reformulated as pure D-isomer prodrug, and had to run a whole new set of bridging studies. Added 18 months to the timeline.
So the cleaner side effect profile that makes Vyvanse. Vyvanse that wasn't in the original plan. It was a rescue.
It was a salvage operation. They had one shot. Adderall XR was going generic, Shire needed a replacement, and if the prodrug concept failed, they had nothing in late-stage development. I remember standing in the monitoring room watching the ECG data come in from the L-isomer arm and thinking, well, that's it. But the D-isomer arm looked clean. Cleaner than Adderall XR, actually, because you're not getting the peripheral L-amphetamine effects at all.
So the thing that makes Vyvanse the gold standard, the smoothness, the tolerability, was almost an accident of the L-isomer being toxic enough to force a reformulation.
I wouldn't call it an accident. They made the right call when the data told them to. Plenty of companies would have pushed the racemic mixture through anyway and tried to manage the side effects with labeling. Shire didn't.
That decision, pure D-amphetamine prodrug, is why Vyvanse has a fundamentally different side effect profile from Adderall XR, even though they're both amphetamines. The 3-to-1 D-to-L ratio in Adderall means you're getting a meaningful dose of L-amphetamine with every pill. Vyvanse gives you none. That's not a marketing distinction. That's pharmacology.
Hilbert, you said you were coordinating the trial. What year was this?
2006 through 2007. Phase 3, multi-site, double-blind, placebo-controlled. I handed out the placebo envelopes. 47 sites across the US and Canada. The enrollment was brutal. They needed 650 patients, and we were competing with three other ADHD trials in the same geography. I spent 6 months calling pediatricians in suburban New Jersey begging for referrals.
The drug launched in 2007, so that timeline you mentioned, 18 months of bridging studies, that was cutting it close.
FDA approval came in February 2007. We'd submitted in December 2006. That's a two-month review. I've never seen anything move that fast before or since. The agency knew what they were looking at.
A prodrug stimulant with no abuse, liability by the intranasal route, no food interactions, and a cleaner cardiovascular profile than everything else on the market.
They'd been waiting for it. The DEA was already making noise about Adderall abuse on college campuses. Vyvanse solved a regulatory problem as much as a clinical one.
That's the part of the story that doesn't make it into the prescribing information. Vyvanse succeeded not just because it was a good drug, but because it arrived at exactly the moment when the political and regulatory environment was ready for a less abusable stimulant. If it had come out 5 years earlier, before the Adderall abuse panic, it might have been a niche product. Nice mechanism, but why pay brand prices when generic Adderall XR works fine? Instead, it became the answer to a question everyone was asking.
The question now is whether the pendulum is swinging further, past less abusable stimulant to no stimulant at all. That's the Qelbree story.
Right? And that's where we'll be watching the centanafadine data in 2027. If a non-stimulant can match stimulant efficacy, the whole category gets redefined. But that's a big if. Atomoxetine has been on the market since 2002, and it never got there. The effect sizes just aren't the same.
The cutting room floor detail I keep coming back to is that the attitude chart lists over 30 formulations, and Vyvanse still wins on smooth coverage after all these years. But the thing it doesn't win, motivation boost, is exactly what some patients need most. The throne is secure, but it's not universal.
No drug is. The best we can do is understand the split well enough to shorten the trial and error period. Knowing that methylphenidate and amphetamine work differently, that failing one doesn't mean failing treatment. That alone changes outcomes. The 30% crossover rate means there are people walking around right now who think ADHD medication doesn't work for them, and they're wrong. They just haven't tried the other branch.
Which brings us to the open question. Will the next blockbuster ADHD medication be a better stimulant, or will it be something that doesn't touch dopamine reuptake at all? Centanafadine in 2027 could reshape the landscape. Or it could be another atomoxetine, effective but not dominant. Vyvanse's throne is secure for now, but the definition of best is shifting under it. From longest coverage to fewest side effects, from fewest side effects to no scheduled substance status. The goalposts are moving.
That's probably healthy. A market where one drug dominates for 15 years isn't a market that's producing enough genuine innovation. The non-stimulant pipeline, the digital adjuncts, the neuromodulation devices, none of them threaten Vyvanse today. But they're expanding the definition of what ADHD treatment can be. That's good for patients, even if it's bad for Takeda's quarterly earnings.
Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for the trial coordinator war stories. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you want to send us a question like Daniel did, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.